Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. So much fun spending 2 hours with you every Saturday morning. Great Steve Paulette. He's the puppeteer behind it all. Genius. It's fantastic. I've been a surgeon for 30 years, in practice for 30 years. He's been doing this for more than 30 years. And I don't do it alone. Makes it special. Today's topic is about the Dodgers and their winning ways. They got the smartest brains there are. All those computer geeks from Andrew Friedman on down. Dave Roberts, better known as Doc, because Dave Roberts is D-R, and that's how you spell doctor. Did you know that? Kind of like Dr. Buss. He's not a medical doctor. He has a PhD in chemistry, but he's Dr. Buss. Then there's Dr. J. A lot of doctors. Dr. Pepper. But the reality is, the last time we won the World Series, it was with Tommy Lasorda as the manager. And his gift of manipulating the situation in a playful way, confidence, and absolute cleverness is a tradition of Italian Americans. The playfulness comes from the Italian roots, and the risk-taking comes from being in America, in my opinion. And so I'm dedicating today's show to that feeling because they know how to live life. The joy of life, nobody does it better than Italian. We were going to have a pizza guy on today, but I decided to make a left turn. But I do want to talk about one guy, the best pizza maker in America, happens to be in Brooklyn at DeFara's Pizzeria. If he charged $50 a slice, you still need to get online and get a slice of it because he's been making the pizza by himself with no help since 1963. And here's why. Listen to him speak.
When you do something you like to do, it's okay. And then if you're forced to do, you know, change feeling. I do because I want to do, you know.
He loves making pizza. And he makes the best pizza you'll ever have in your life. And he's in Brooklyn at DeFara's. Tommy Lasorda approaches baseball. It could be any other sport, any other activity, in the same way. He does it not because he's being forced to do it, because he loves to do it. But the cleverness that he has, the artistic approach, that's his Italian roots. So listen to how he looked at Oral Hershiser. He saw all the talent inside him, but it wasn't coming out. And in order for them to win a World Series, they needed an ace pitcher who wasn't scared. His name was Oral. Tommy Lasorda says, I didn't like his name. He pitched like a scared dog, and I needed to do something about it. Lasorda was smart enough, clever enough, to give him a nickname, Bulldog. Listen to how this came about.
When I thought about him when he came here and I saw him pitch and the way he pitched, I thought that he didn't have much inside here. He was a negative pitcher. Every ball he threw with a negative attitude. And then I had that famous one-on-one meeting with him. I told him he was scared. I didn't like his name. I think he should be given another name. So I said, you pitched yesterday like a scared dog. So from now on, your name is Bulldog. I'm going to call you Bulldog, and you'll be a Bulldog, and you'll act like a Bulldog. And that's what happened. He acted like a Bulldog, and he changed and pitched like a Bulldog. And of course, we broke a record that I never thought would be broken, Drysdale's 58 and two-thirds inning.
The marriage of playfulness, confidence, cleverness is a tradition when Italy meets America. This is Yogi Berra, Whitey Ford, with Tim Russert.
In Whitey's book, he says that you're the best catcher in the history of the Yankees. Bill Dickey is second. Thurman Yogi Munson, Elston Howard, and Jorge Posada, the current pitcher. That's a pretty nice honor.
Well, it was a great honor. Don't forget, we had some pretty good pitchers when I came over there. You had Whitey, you had Reynolds, Rashi, Lopat, Turley filled in after. And, we have a few, quite Cooks pitched a good game for it. We always seem to get a guy that come in at pretty good.
He's self-deprecating. He's not willing to take all the credit. He always deflects it. But Yogi Berra was in 13 World Series. He played in 10 of them as a player. The other was as a coach and manager. A phenomenal hitter. And he was only 5'7". But he was a tiger in the tank. The combination of being so good at it and playfulness. Listen to Reggie Jackson tell his favorite Yogi Berra story.
I want to tell one Yogi story before we miss it. We talked about Old Timers Day, and on this day they had, you know, Joe D and Mickey were there, and Yogi, Rizzuto, and Whitey and myself, and I was in the Hall of Fame at the time. And for some reason, Yogi was standing next to me. And every year, they would run they would scroll all of the people that had passed during the baseball year.
Yeah.
You ever heard this story?
Yeah.
No, during the baseball year, they would scroll down the people that had left the baseball world. And you'd see Lee McPhail and the different players' names that came down there. Yogi is standing next to me, and we're watching the thing go, and he goes like this to me, hey. And I said, yeah, Yogi, what do you want? He said, boy, I hope I don't ever see my name up there.
Because he'd be dead. Thank you. Talk about playfulness and seriousness. There's an iconic photograph. My favorite. We love Andrew Bernstein. But this is from 1956, October 8th, 1956. Don Larsen pitches, like Sandy Koufax later in the 60s, a perfect game. Different than a no-hitter. Better than a no-hitter. Nobody ever gets to the base. It's a perfect game. Don Larsen, in 1956, pitches a perfect game in the World Series. Game 5 of the World Series. Can you imagine? The guy who caught that pitcher, Don Larsen, for that game, beating the Dodgers, by the way, the Brooklyn Dodgers, was Yogi Berra. But the photograph, you should Google this, you'll be delighted, shows Yogi Berra, all 5'7" of him, jumping into the arms of Don Larsen. Remember when Magic jumped into Kareem's arms? The enthusiasm, the playfulness, and yet something incredibly magical just happened. That was Yogi Berra. Here's Yogi Berra, again, self-deprecating, soft-spoken about it, but he was confident and a tiger in his own way.
Look how long we've been playing this game. There's never been a no-hitter in the World Series, and he pitches a perfect one. So how good could it be? A lot of people ask me, what was one of your biggest thrills? The no-hitter.
A remarkable thing occurred at Yankee Stadium a few years ago.
Listen to
where
this.
They commemorated the perfect game, mm-hmm. and they reenacted the last pitch, and Don threw it, and you caught it, and then you go upstairs, and David Cone goes and throws a perfect game.
Yeah, I threw the opening pitch to Yogi, you know, started off, and I went over and shook David Cone's hand, just wish him good luck. And as time went on, we were asked to stay.
And he pitches a perfect game. These guys only show up when there's a perfect game. Here's Whitey Ford, Yogi Berra, and Tim Russert. And I just want you to get a sense of what a talented two players these are. They were roommates, like the Odd Couple. The playfulness, the kibitzing. But it's the association with risk-taking as well, and the craft of it all. You combine both, the yin and yang, the seriousness and the joyfulness.
Tim, he got away with a lot, though. You know, when we did go out.
Whitey
Ford.
Nobody
knew Whitey. I'm not kidding you.
We go out to dinner and everything. These guys are drinking up pretty good. Well, I drank a little too, but but they say, who's this guy next to you? You know, they say Whitey Ford. They figured he had white hair, but he didn't. He had a blonde hair. He's white blonde now, but yeah, he didn't get recognized that quick. It's
you
true
were roommates.
Enough alone.
Listen to this.
This is the original Odd Couple. Eh?
That's right.
Yogi, what time did you wake up in the morning?
About 6 in the morning, 6:30.
And what time did Whitey wake up?
Whitey, we had a day game in Chicago. I woke him up. He says I didn't wake him up, but I did. I said, I'm going down, Whitey, and I'm going to the ballpark, so get up. And he overslept.
He overslept.
Lie, Yogi, lie.
You're a liar.
He gets up at 6:30 in the morning. I said, wake me up for breakfast. He never came back to the room. Red Patterson woke me up at noon for a 1 o'clock game.
Oh,
I was pitching. I got there about, got to the park at 20 to 1, and guys like Bauer and Houck are looking at me. I'm a rookie with the club 1 month. They said, don't fool with our money, kid. Being in the World Series.
So playoff money in the World Series money, which is a big deal.
Thank God
bonus.
I won that game. I beat the White Sox with it, but, you know, getting to the park 20 minutes before
I
the
snuck
game
in one night about midnight,
and I didn't turn no lights on. I'm tripping over furniture trying to get to the bathroom to take my clothes off to get to bed. And I bang my toes, and I finally sneak into bed, put the covers over me, and he turns the light on after me.
Well, you get up at 6 o'clock, go have breakfast, right?
Yeah.
Come back.
Yeah.
He's still trying to sleep. You'd wake him up. And then you'd go to back to sleep.
I would. If it's a night game, I do. I always took a nap in the afternoon, Tim. I always did about an hour. I wait till the afternoon paper come out. I go up and read and then take a little nap.
He was the greatest catcher probably ever. Self-deprecating. Playfulness. Joyfulness. Combined them both. That's the Italian-American spirit. It's a beautiful thing to behold in sports. And in art, nobody did it better. And making that movie, The Godfather.
We've known each other many years, but this is the first time you ever came to the council.
Marlon Brando.
I can't remember the last time.
He's not Italian, by the way.
House for a cup of coffee.
But just like Tommy Lasorda,
my wife
saw the talent in Oral Hershiser.
But let's be frank.
The director.
You never wanted my friendship.
Francis Ford Coppola. Had to have this guy be the Italian giant, the Godfather.
I understand.
He's pretending to be
Italian.
So listen to the story of Francis Ford Coppola, briefly.
The studio didn't want Brando. And I was told by the president of Paramount Pictures, Francis, Marlon Brando will not appear in this movie, and I forbid you, as president of Paramount, to bring his name up again. And at which time I fell on the floor in a faint, and I like had a, you know, I did it deliberately, and they said, what? I said, well, if I can't even talk about it, then what kind of director am I? He's okay, you can talk about it.
But listen to how they made it not possible.
And then they said to me, finally, okay, we give you three conditions for Brando. One, he does the film for free. Two, he does a screen test. And three, he puts up $1 million bond, so if any misbehaving on the set happens, he is underwritten. I said, I accept.
Yeah, because he saw in Brando what Tommy saw in Oral Hershiser. It's what Yogi Berra saw in Don Larsen. Don Larsen was not a star pitcher in any way. But they could see things. Through that playfulness, they were the best at what they did.
So that's what I had. I had that he had to do it for nothing. He had to do a screen test. How was I going to get Marlon Brando to do a screen test? And he had to put up a bond. So I went, I talked to Brando. I didn't know Brando, but you know, I think he was pretty down and out. He had been in a film called Quemada, Burn, which by Pontecorvo, who made the great Battle of Algiers. And he was like so not in favor that they really thought that if he were in the movie, it would be worse than if an unknown were in the movie.
Wow.
So with Brando, I talked to him knowing he was an actor. I said, you know, I said, you're playing an Italian. Maybe you would like to fool around a little and improvise some things to see if you could get the essence of an Italian. You know, he was only 47 years old, and the character Godfather is in his 60s. So he, on the phone, I think he said yes, he would do that. And I made a date with him to go to his house and shoot a little and do a little improvisation.
See, he's manipulating. He sees the power in him, like Tommy Lasorda saw it in Earl Hershiser and called him Bulldog and snapped him out of it. He's not going to do a screen test. Marlon Brando does not want to do this. But Francis Ford Coppola, like Tommy Lasorda, knew it had to be him.
So with Brando, I talked to him knowing he was an actor. Sure enough, there's a rumble and he's going to come and the door opens and out walks this beautiful man with long blonde hair and a Japanese robe and I'm shooting him and I say good morning and, you know, he was as sharp as a tack. He knew everything. He looked around, he saw the ninjas and he knew I was filming him. This was, quote, the screen test. But I had brought like some sausage and some provolone and some Toscano cigars, and I had put these props around. And he came out and he looked at all this and he figured out what was going on. And he took his hair and he did his hair up. He had very long blonde hair. And he did it up in a kind of thing himself in the back. And he took shoe polish and he made it black. And then he put on a shirt and he, I remember him saying, those guys, the lapel has always got a crooked part, you know. And he did that. He made the lapel, and he started to do that. And then he said, you know, he was shot in the throat. In the book, he was shot in the throat. So he talks like that, maybe. I said, yeah, you know, I'm filming. And then he said, he should look like a bulldog. And he took some Kleenex, and he put the Kleenex like that. And then he started, like, acting, but not saying anything. And it was in his house. And I'm shooting, and we're all shooting, and he starts going, and the phone rings. His phone rings over here. I don't know who was calling, but he goes, so
he's
anyway,
in Italian
it was
now.
A miraculous transformation. It was the birth of that character.
Yep.
So I figured
he
I was going to play my cards. I wasn't going to show it to the president of Paramount Pictures. I went to New York with the videotape. And I went to the office of Gulf and Western. Charlie Bluthorn was the head of the company, and he was the big boss.
Look how clever he was, Francis Ford Coppola. He knew what he wanted, and no one was getting in his way.
And I knocked on his office. I had set up a tape recorder in the conference room near his office. And I said to him, does Mr. Bluthorn have 5 minutes that I could show him something? And he knew me. I mean, Charlie Bluthorn, it was Church of England, but he had a Viennese accent, and he talked like, Francis, what are you doing, you crazy Francis? So he sees me, and he says, what is it? I said, Charlie, could I just show you something? And he comes out, and he looks. I turn on the video thing, and there is this guy with blonde hair, and Charlie Bluthorn said, no, absolutely. That's incredible. And when he said, that's incredible, and it was incredible, I knew that if Charlie Bluthorn okayed it, then it would okay, and that's how he got the part. They forgot about the $1 million bond, but they didn't hardly pay him anything. They paid him like $120,000.
And The Godfather became one of the greatest movies of all time, and Tommy Lasorda with Earl Hershiser, the Bulldog, won the World Series. Coming up next, the clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. We all need to be a little bit Italian today. Dedicating the show to the Italian-American zest, joy for life, the spirit. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on ESPN LA 710. That's the great Lady Gaga, probably short for Garagiola, because she's Italian. This is fantastic, Steve Paulette. You just seem to find all the Italians that we didn't even know were there. I got a great text from Ben Lyons, the great Ben Lyons, my favorite host. You all can reach out on Twitter, at Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm not really good at Facebook or any of the other things, but I like Twitter. nice promo about Africa. We'll get into that. And I'd love to tell you what my thoughts are about Kevin Durant and why he's not going to play again in this second game. Maybe in the next segment I'll clue you into my opinion of what's going on. But let's take some calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to David in Santa Monica. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, doctor.
How are you, David? What do you do for a living?
Well, I work in finance and helping people, you know, put money aside the right way and protect their income.
Nice. The stock market's really going down south these last few days. How are you? Are you holding up okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the philosophies we tell people is that, you know, it's like an airplane ride.
You know,
in the airplane, you're going to hit some turbulence, but you don't grab a parachute and jump out.
I like that one. Good job, David. What did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was a truck driver and a cab driver eventually. He was in the Korean War.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia.
And when did you come to Los Angeles?
Wow, I came to Los Angeles about 1985.
What brought you here?
My brother, one of my oldest brothers, was out here on a degree program with Georgia Tech, and I hadn't seen him in about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
So I took some vacation time, and well, let me go out to California. Never been out here, and decided to come out here and on a whim and to visit him, and wound up staying.
I want to know about your grandfather and being in the South.
Wow.
And how he grew up. Did your grandfather ever share any stories with you of what it was like to grow up in the South?
Wow. Yes, he did.
You have any idea what kind of class and dignity your grandfather must have had to put up with the stuff he had to put up with?
Yes, indeed, sir.
So I don't want them saying those are the good old days. No, they're not. These are the good old days. Because how he had to survive,
yes,
you know,
indeed.
One
story sticks out.
Tell me.
Prevalent. I know I was probably about 9 or 10 when he told me this, but I found out that, you know, because they lived in the, you know, Deep South, he had 11 kids. My mom was the oldest daughter.
Wow.
And at times he had to sit out on his porch with his double-barrel shotgun, just in case some Klansmen came by.
Can you imagine?
And all my uncles knew how to shoot.
That's amazing. But, he must have been just so proud of you.
Yeah, he was. I had four brothers, and you know, from my mom. This is my mom's dad.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them, actually my dad's father, and they grew up not too far from each other. So
wow.
They went to the same high school, my mom and my dad. And they both, my both grandparents were farmers.
Sharecroppers.
Right. Man, you know
what that means, David? That means they couldn't own the land.
Exactly. But
God bless you. Look at that. This entire historical event, with him holding a shotgun, dealing with the Klan, led to you getting out of Atlanta to come to Los Angeles so that all of a sudden, my crazy life, your crazy life, all of a sudden, these two giant helium balloons now are touching each other at this moment on the radio. Isn't that incredible?
That's wonderful.
It goes back to him on the porch and my father being denied a job because they found out he was Jewish, even though he had blonde hair and blue eyes. When they learned on the docks that he was Jewish, the guy at the dock said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Clapper, we don't have a job for you." So, you know what? It's amazing that now together, you and me, we're talking on the phone. That's fantastic. All right, how can I help you? What's going on?
Well, I want to say thank you again because you helped me once a couple of years ago. My son had injured his knee.
Mm-hmm.
He's a basketball player, and that turned out very well. We didn't do any surgery.
Great.
You advised against it. You told me about no cortisone.
Good. I need your son to call up and say thank you. Forget about having his father do it.
Right. I get him about the bed.
He's a millennial. What can we do?
Yeah. He's home from college, so they're sleeping in. Yeah,
I love it. God bless him. All right, what's up?
What's going on now is my wife is having some problems with her right knee, and actually she's joined us. You know, she's up now. So
you better let her do the talking.
What's going on? Yeah. Good morning, Dr. Clapper. How are you?
Hi. How many years are you married, young lady?
22 years.
That's
last month.
That's fantastic. Mazel tov. It takes a lot of hard work to stay married, doesn't it?
Absolutely. That's what I tell everyone all the time.
I had this cute couple in my office recently. I looked at them, and every time I talked to the woman, she needed her knee replaced, the husband would be answering. I realized this is. I said to them, how many years are you married? Dr. Clapper, we're married 62 years. I said, oh, my God, how do you stay married for 62 years? And then I look at the husband with the big mouth. He goes, love. And then I looked at the wife, and she goes, space. So tell me about your knee.
Well, about the beginning of April, I started getting some stiffness and some acute pain in my knee just randomly. And so I decided to finally get some x-rays done a couple of weeks ago. And so I got the results from a doctor, and she told me that I have some fluid on my right knee and some degenerative changes. She then went ahead and ordered an MRI. So I got that done, but I have to wait till next week for the results. So basically, it's just if I sit too long.
So here's what I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an executive assistant for a private firm, and I do a lot of moving around on my feet.
Got it. Okay. So, first question is, how could you tell there's arthritis by just looking at the x-ray? Probably is a waste of time to getting the MRI, but because if they're already seeing things on the x-ray, then, you, in my opinion, you really don't even need an MRI. For what? Because you're not having surgery so fast on your knee, in my opinion.
Okay.
There's a book I wrote, which you need to buy yourself an early birthday present, that I wrote with Lindy Huey called Heal Your Knees. It's going to show you exercises to do in the pool and on a bike. And I don't want you to be using a treadmill, lunges, squats, stair machines, or weights. When we look at an x-ray, the only thing that shows up on an x-ray is bone because it has calcium in it, right? Yeah. But when you have a knee joint, it has cartilage. It has a brake pad at the end of the bone, articular cartilage. And that brake pad doesn't have calcium. So it shows up as a beautiful, wide, thick space between the femur and the tibia bone. That's your knee joint, right?
Okay.
But as you wear away the brake pad, the cartilage, which doesn't have calcium, you will see the first of four things on the x-ray. One, joint space narrowing. You'll see the two bones look like they're kissing each other because you wore away the invisible cartilage, but we can tell it's worn away because we see the two bones getting closer. That's the first of four things. Second, because you no longer have the brake pad, the cushion, the bone gets stressed without this cushion in a bad way and becomes more dense. It loses its blood supply in this one spot. And the bone actually becomes more dense and wider on the x-ray, and that's called sclerosis. That's the second thing we look for. The third thing, because of the movement that can now happen microscopically because you've lost that thick cartilage, we start to grow extra bones, not cancer. We grow bone spurs. They're called osteophytes. So if you see a bone spur and joint space narrowing and the sclerosis, you can already say, aha, you're losing your cartilage, you got arthritis. The fourth thing, by the way, is we see fluid in the bone called subchondral cysts. So you for sure have a degeneratively torn meniscus, I can tell you right now. I could see through the radio. That's what you got going on. And that's what the MRI will confirm. You're going to have the test. Okay, that's what it's going to show. But I'm here to tell you. What's your first name?
Jan.
Jan.
Yes.
The torn meniscus in your son, the basketball player, needs stitches, needs to be repaired. You need to preserve. You need surgery if it's torn, God forbid. But I'm here to tell you, even a not-so-great meniscus, which I can guarantee you will be the case in your MRI, needs not to be operated on. Because even though it's not a great cushion, it's not a great meniscus, and it's causing you some discomfort and swelling and pain now, but if you let the doctor take it out, you're now faster going to have this knee get arthritis quicker. So what do? Well, you've picked the best joint in the body to have this problem. It's your knee, because there's powerful muscles above, the quadriceps, the hamstring, powerful muscles below the knee, the calf muscle, that if you strengthen them with the pool and the bike, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, half an hour, walk forwards and backwards in a pool. This is all outlined in the book. And Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, you start riding a stationary bike. 15 minutes start out with, work your way up to a half an hour. It's kind of, here's the visual I want you to have, Jan. You right now have a blister in your knee. It hurts. Doesn't make sense to rub a blister, but guess what happens to a blister? It becomes a callus. That's what you will do with your knee. Give it the summer. Do this for a few months. If your knee still hurts, you better call me back. But I'm here to tell you, your blister will become a callus, and you're going to be just fine.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Clapper.
You're very welcome, and it's a pleasure to have you listen to the show, and I appreciate it, and I want you to do me a favor. Find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I will do that. Thank
all right.
you.
All right. God bless you, your son, and your husband. Love it. All right. We'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. I got to tell you my thoughts about Kevin Durant, and I'll also take some calls. The clinic's open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Mambo Italiano, my mambo. Mambo Italiano, go, go. Mambo goes crazy. Mambo. The great Rosemary Clooney. Mambo. Who's George Clooney's aunt, actually. Hey, mamba. Hey, kumba. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let me teach you a little bit about Kevin Durant. When basketball players, like Chris Paul, remember he hurt his thumb. Nick Young also hurt his thumb trying to steal a ball from Kobe that time in practice. Remember that? Radial collateral ligament in his thumb. But those players can still maintain their aerobic conditioning so that when the upper extremity, elbow, wrist, hand, shoulder injury heals, they're back. Once the healing takes place, they're back. But what about a lower extremity injury? That's a different story, because Kevin Durant not only has to rest and heal the strain, he then has to work on the stiffness and the strength, the range of motion, to come back to be able to play. But there's a whole nother level of NBA condition. So he's going to be out for game two. You do the math about his return and his conditioning. That's all I'm going to say. That's a real challenge. If anybody could do it, he could. But that's a challenge, and that's a tough one. Since we're talking so much about Italian-Americans and the playfulness of Italy, married to an American's mindset of risk-taking, who is infused with Italian? None other than our favorite Kobe Bryant.
La passione. La passione per la vita, la passione per giocare a pallacanestro e fare la cosa che ami con tutto il cuore. Sempre la passione in Italia, la passione con la famiglia, sai, con i figli, con tutte le cose che è importante per te, per avere nella tua vita, è rimasta sempre con me, sempre con Italia, era sempre un posto nel mio cuore.
Passion, that's what he's saying. Passion for life, passion for basketball, passion for your family, passion for everything. You do things because you love it, not just because you have to.
When you do something you like to do, it's okay. Then if you force to do, you know, change feeling. I do because I want to do, you know.
You do it. That's the man from DeFara Pizza. Inspiring. All right, we got time to take one call for the last segment, or should we take a break? Take one? Okay. All right, let's do that. Let's go to Matthew in L.A. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, good morning, Dr. Clapper.
Good morning, Matthew. You listen to the show every Saturday?
Absolutely, and this is honestly such an honor right now to be talking to you. I'm kind of nervous.
Don't be nervous. I won't bite you through the phone, but that's fantastic. You like Clapper Vision?
I love Clapper Vision. I'm such a fan, and you know, I'm just it's so amazing how you're changing so many lives, and you do it through the air, and you do it so givingly. And like I said, I'm so humbled and so honored to be on the line with you.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. Yeah, listen, you're the reason I do this show. You for people like you, so that you can now see a total stranger today and go, look what Dr. Clapper did for these people he doesn't even know. Now I can do something for somebody else, and that's what we make the world a better place one person at a time. That's how it works. What do you do for a living?
I'm actually a substitute teacher and a sports coach. I do high school sports.
See, this is the greatest thing that you can do with one's life is teaching. Number two, nursing. You are a teacher. You don't have to find a total stranger and do something nice for them. You already are blessing us. The fact that our society doesn't pay the teachers anything is a big problem with what we have going on. But that's great. What did your father do for a living?
My father was, he worked for the insurance company GMAC, and he was a financial advisor.
Wow. And what inspired you, and who inspired you to become a teacher?
You know what? I actually got into it by default, but at the same time, I really got into it because of coaching. I got into coaching. I used to be a referee at the local elementary, my school district.
Wow.
And then as a coach, you know, they kind of recommended me to get involved with the district as a substitute. And I've been doing it for 4 years, and actually I've been inspired because it is a really rewarding job working with the kids.
Yeah.
And now I'm actually pursuing my single subject credentials so I can do PE and high school coaching.
Wow. I want you to do me one favor. I want you to read about the life of James Naismith. He was a PE teacher. He's the man who invented the game of basketball in 2 weeks to satisfy the head of the department who said, you're the rookie teacher. You need to come up with a game to keep these football players from acting out. It's the most fascinating story, James Naismith creating the game of basketball. All right, how can I help you? Tell me what's up.
So about three and a half, maybe even 4 years ago, I had an injury where I thought I kind of pulled a muscle. It was in my lower back. I was working for a chiropractor at the time, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept going to work. I used to do business-to-business marketing, public relations. So, and it got worse and worse and worse until the point I had severe sciatica down my left leg where I could not stand or I could not walk for more than 30 seconds. That's when I decided to go get the x-ray because this was ongoing for months. I literally thought it was a pulled muscle because I was an athlete growing up, played a lot of sports. So when I went to go to get the x-ray, they told me I had a grade 1 anterolisthesis, L5S1.
That's exactly right.
And I had a grade 1 retrolisthesis, L4, L5.
Wow.
And I had a pars defect. And I've been kind of going back and forth. This has been ongoing for 3 years. I'm better. I don't have the sciatica anymore. But I still deal with a little chronic pain, a little tightness, a little stiffness, soreness here and there. I'm doing a lot better now. But at the same time, it's still something as a young man where it concerns me, where I haven't fully kind of beat it yet. And I'm really working towards it. And like I said, every time I call your show, I'm dying to call you. And this is the first time I've actually been able to.
All right, let me tell you what's going on. I'm going to give you some Clapper Vision. When you go to the store and you buy a bag of Oreo cookies, you will see that they put them in that package lined up perfectly in a straight line. The cookie is your spine bone, the vertebral body, and the cream filling is the disc. And in college, I used to have a quart of milk, and I'd eat the whole package of Oreo cookies. I can't do that anymore because I get too fat. But that stack is just beautiful and true how straight up it goes. What if instead of taking the cookie off the top of the whole column, you, crazy, decided to pull the third one from the bottom out of the middle of the column? You wanted to pull that one and eat that one. Well, guess what happens? The whole stack of cookies is going to fall down. You got to take it off the top one after the other. You can't pull it out of the bottom. A listhesis, whether it's antero or retro, either going forward or back, is you pulling the cookie. A grade one means a quarter of the size of the cookie comes out. Well, that screws up the balancing act of how straight the spine is. That puts extra stress on the nerves and the discs around it. Now, why would that be happening to your spine? You're a nice guy. Why did God pick on you this time? Because in the creation of the stack of Oreo cookies, you actually had one of the cookies that wasn't completely round. That cookie had a crack in it, and a piece, that cookie chip, if you will, the fragment pulled away a little bit. Not a lot, but just a little bit, so that it made a weaker junction of the cookie above it and the cookie below it. That's what a PARS defect is. It's a crack in the cookie that affects the stability. In a young person, we put people in a brace, and they can often, particularly if you're a teenager, and which, by the way, you had this while you were a teenager, you just didn't know it, you can sometimes get away with just bracing a kid who's still growing, and it will fuse and heal on its own, which is a real victory. Now that you're 32 years old and it still exists, this is a different story. Doesn't mean you need to have a spine fusion. Do not let anyone shoot you with epidurals and cortisone. You do not want to disturb this hornet's nest. Yes, someday you may need a fusion to stabilize it, but you might be able to avoid surgery. How? Keeping your weight off and recognizing that running up and down the field or the court is ba-boom, it's banging on it. But if you can fall in love with a core strengthening program from Pilates, yoga, all these exercises that you can learn from a good physical therapist, swimming, these are great things to keep your core strong. Then you can make a living and abuse it as a referee, as a coach. Fine. That's abuse. You've got to start thinking about the nurturing exercises you do during the week so you can make a living doing the coaching and running up and down the court. Capiche?
Absolutely, yes. And I'm currently working with a physical therapist to try to, you know, stretch right. and do some core strength. And the thing is, I've been so, scared is not the right word, but yeah, I've been so hesitant to do anything because I do not want to go backwards and go back
right.
to that.
You're doing the right thing. Matthew, you're doing the right thing. And if you run into any trouble, please let me know and I'll help you.
Man, thank you so much, Dr. Clapp. I appreciate the Clapper vision.
Okay, young man. Appreciate you. Coming up next, we'll take the last segment. We'll take a break right now. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. This girl is on fire. Alicia Keys, don't you love how she says fire? F-I-A-H-H. Fire. So talented. Went to the Juilliard School in New York. This girl can play every instrument and write music. She's the real deal. And who knew? Mother's Italian. And that is why Steve Paulette has picked her to close out the show. What a pleasure. What a great day. Who knew the influence of the Italian-American? But it's Tommy Lasorda, right? Tommy Lasorda meeting Earl Hershiser and making him into one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He broke Don Drysdale's record, but he wouldn't have unless Tommy Lasorda told him to toughen up. And I'm calling you Bulldog. We're not calling you Oral, as Tommy Lasorda says, I didn't like his name.
When I thought about him when he came here and I saw him pitch and the way he pitched, I thought that he didn't have much inside here. He was a negative pitcher. Every ball he threw with a negative attitude. And then I had that famous one-on-one meeting with him. I told him he was scared. I didn't like his name. I think he should be given another name. So I said, you pitched yesterday like a scared dog. So from now on, your name is Bulldog.
Wow.
I'm going to call you Bulldog, and you'll be a Bulldog, and you'll act like a Bulldog. And that's what happened. He acted like a bulldog, and he changed and pitched like a bulldog.
Wow.
And of course, he broke a record that I never thought would be broken. Drysdale's 58 and two-thirds inning.
Dave Roberts, we just need you to keep channeling your inner Tommy Lasorda. Although they probably don't let you because they got all these guys upstairs with the computers on trying to figure out whether to squeeze or bunt or hit away or whatever. But back in the day in 1988, it was all that Italian-American manager thinking on his feet, thinking with his gut, figuring it out. Combining the world of creativity, cleverness, confidence, playfulness. But there was a serious side. And that's why Tommy Lasorda was a winner. And that's why the Dodgers did win the World Series. Until next week, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. And thanks for telling all your friends. You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Robert Clapper. Until then, I'll see you on the radio.